Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Welcome back, everybody. Julie and I are so excited today because Patricia McConnell has joined us to talk about fear and trauma in dogs. If you don't know Dr. McConnell, you should, because she has been a huge influence in the world of dogs. She has a PhD in zoology and specializes in animal behavior. She spent the last 25 years improving the lives and relationships of people and dogs, and she's written a bazillion books. The book we'll probably be talking about the most today is her memoir, The Education of Will, which really addresses the subject of fear and trauma, which is near and dear to Julie and my hearts for helping dogs. So welcome, Patricia. We're so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. What fun.
Yes, we are delighted. So I'm going to start off with, I think it's important for people to understand terms so that we're all on the same page. So I was hoping you could talk about what trauma is and how that what it is and how we may be able to recognize that in dogs.
You are a woman after my own heart, because on the notes that I made for myself in preparation for our talk is, first, define trauma.
All right. I'm so excited. I'm in sync with Patricia McConnell. Okay. So
We are definitely in sync. So here's the thing about trauma, and I learned personally so much about this when I was doing my own therapy and recovering from traumas in my past and writing on The Education of Will. And it's really interesting biologically. Trauma is very different than fear. Fear is, we all know what fear is, right? You know, you're afraid of snakes, or a dog is afraid of somebody grabbing their collar. Fear is a very important response to a potentially dangerous situation. What's different about trauma is that it becomes pervasive. You know, trauma is a kind of the best way I know to think about trauma is to go backwards a little bit and to think about how all mammals are, we're sort of basically a chemical experiment, right? And we have certain boundaries within which our bodies and our minds have to function. So just take temperature, for example. There's this boundary, low, boundary high, of temperature that we can function within. And if it gets over that boundary, say it's a little hot, you can be a little uncomfortable. And if it keeps going higher and higher, you get more and more uncomfortable, and eventually you can die, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in most situations, unless your temperature gets too high, you're resilient. You can bounce back to your normal state. So you can get back to where you were. Trauma is basically a situation in which emotionally, psychologically, you have been pushed past that boundary into an extreme that changes brain structure, that changes physiology, and you can't get back. So it's pervasive in that it can be generalized. Good mm-hmm. example is that people who have been traumatized by, say, a car accident, which, by the way, can cause quite a few people who are in a serious car accident develop PTSD, especially if it happened out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have been in a really bad car accident, but it's not just cars that you're afraid of. With me, I was assaulted also had somebody literally fell from the sky and died right in front of my feet. I mean, that literally, out of the blue, somebody fell from the sky and died at my feet.
Yeah, and you write about that in The Education of Will very openly. That's shocking stuff.
It is, and I'm good now, by the way. So,
and we're all resilience skills.
Yes.
And I say that because sometimes talking about trauma can be really traumatizing to people. So mm-hmm. I don't want people listening to be upset by it. So one of the things that happened to me is I became terrified of dark places. Well, mm-hmm. that had nothing to do with anything. basically. And I developed a fear that my house was going to burn down. And I developed a fear that there was a man behind me with a baseball bat about to hit me. Nothing like that ever happened. But that's really common with individuals who've been traumatized. The other thing about trauma is that it's long-lasting. Is, you know, you get permanent changes in your brain structure. Well, not, they don't have to be permanent, but you get substantial changes. The amygdala gets bigger, the prefrontal cortex gets smaller, the hippocampus gets smaller. So it's sort of pervasive and it's long-lasting. And one of the most important criteria for trauma is, it's called fright by psychologists, and I always laugh at it because fright is like a word that I would use for, you know, being slightly frightened at Halloween when I was 5 years old, you know.
Right.
Oh, I had a little fright on Halloween, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What psychiatrists mean by fright is something very, very different, in that something happens out of the blue, completely out of the blue, such that you are not frightened. You don't feel frightened. You feel stunned. And this is one of the things that I can so well relate to, because it happened to me. It was when that man fell, there was no thought in my brain. My brain was just empty. I wasn't frightened. I wasn't upset. I was speechless and brainless. You know, the only word I can think of is stunned. So that's the general, have I gone on too long? I don't know. That's the general definition of trauma. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. What I tell people when we're talking about trauma, especially if their dog has had a trauma, I said, what you need to understand is it is pervasive over time and experience. So that...
Yeah, perfect.
And they seem to get that. I was thinking when you said that about the man who literally fell from the sky, when I was about 7, when we were in Boston, a pigeon fell off the roof of a house that we were walking through in the old district and just splattered right in front of me. And I was shaking after that. Well, it was interesting because about 20 years later, when my husband and I moved to Boston, we were walking the historic trail, and I was walking up that street where the pigeon had committed suicide in front of me, and I started shaking. I said, this is it. This is the building. And I just started trembling, and I was so stunned because this was like 25, 30 years later. And it still had that effect. So it does last over time. And certainly that's not nearly as traumatic as having a person die. But when you're 7 and a pigeon commits suicide in front of you, that's fairly traumatic.
I'm so glad you brought up that story, because it is so personal, you know, for so many different reasons. And this is true with dogs as much as it is with people. You know, any mammal can be traumatized. And if you want, we can talk about that more in a little bit. But you know, we all have our own story, we all have our own background, we all have our own physiology and neurochemistry. Some of us are more resilient than others. Things happen, you know, at the age of 7, you know, you might have been in a particularly important period of expanding your empathy, you know, loving animals. You might have been in a particular state that day. You know, it might have been, if it happened a year later, it wouldn't have had the same effect. And that's true with all trauma. You know, there's such a personal effect. And I think sometimes people are confused. It's like, well, you know, that happened to her and you know, she was fine, and that happened to him, and he wasn't, and, you know, I don't understand. And you have to understand that trauma has universal facets to it, but we're all individuals, right? And so many factors can influence whether you're traumatized or not.
Yeah. Right. So I think that you're right. There's universal factors the way in which trauma may work in a person, but those universal factors work within a personal experience. And so that's why you can talk to trauma, have somebody understand it, because they've experienced the same sort of physiological response. It's just within their own personal context.
Right.
But then that's where we also get the people who are like, well, that happened to me, or what happened to me was worse, and I'm fine. And it's sometimes we get into comparing pain, you know, like, well, this is worse than that, so therefore that isn't bad. Well, not necessarily. We can all have our individual stresses, and we don't really need to have a contest to see who's got the biggest ones. It's still pain.
Right.
That's
right.
Very good point. It's such an important point. I can tell you what I've been on. When I'm giving talks about the education of will, I cannot tell you how many people come up to me and said, well, what happened to me wasn't anything like what happened to you, sort of apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book, After Silence, about a woman who was raped at knife point by a man who told her he was going to kill her for 5 hours. It was like the worst horror story, right? The worst rape horror story you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
She fell into that too. She was actually calling social services about getting some aid and support. And during the phone call, she thought, I have no business calling and, you know, using up the time and resources. I'm sure there are other people who need this more. So the point about not comparing is such a good one. It's so important. If an individual or a dog is traumatized, they're traumatized.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. all that matters, right?
Mm-hmm. So how can a dog's family know, first, if their dog has been traumatized and how that would be different from just fear, from a family's perspective?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's not, you know, it's not always easy. I mean, it's not always easy in people.
Right.
Literally, you know, sometimes it can take a lot of therapy. I remember talking mm-hmm. to my therapist and saying, so do you think all these things that happened to me, you know, like, you know, I don't know, would that have like an effect? And my therapist was like, so
maybe a little.
So, you know, I mean, trauma is upsetting enough that sometimes, you know, as people have said, there's a reason we repress things. So it's mm-hmm. not always easy with people, but of course it's harder with dogs because we can't ask them. But here, you know, the general symptoms of trauma, I mean, if you look at the medical definitions, you know, there's sort of the three big categories, and one is hyperarousal. So being easily startled, being tense, mm-hmm. being on edge, changes in sleeping all the time or not being able to sleep, that can happen with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Avoiding things, either avoiding places, events, being sort of emotionally numb. I've seen so many clients whose dogs, for example, were great at the dog park, right? They used to go to the dog park, and they were super at the dog park, and everything was good. And then there's an incident, and maybe it's not even a big fight, but say a dog is jumped on from behind by a dog and bullied and sort of, you know, forced down on the ground and growled at and clearly scared, but not even injured, but really scared.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
A not uncommon scenario. This is actually how I first started thinking about trauma in dogs before I started thinking about it in me. Is a really common scenario is, first of all, this emotionally numb. It's sort of like an allergy. It's like a psychological allergy, and that you often don't see the symptoms of it at first. So a lot of these dogs, I'm thinking of the big black lab in particular. So he went back to the dog park the next time. He was great. He was totally fine. And then the next time they went back, he was a little growly with some dogs he didn't know. And then gradually over time, he got worse and worse and worse and became aggressive even walking in the neighborhood street when he'd never been before. So you get this, and then he started getting not wanting to go to the dog park at all. So this sort of build up of, again, these pervasive, generalized behaviors where dogs start getting either easily startled or avoiding things and generalizing it more. So it's not just I'm afraid of vacuum cleaners. It's like, well, first I was afraid of vacuum cleaners, and now I'm afraid of anything moving in the house, and now I'm afraid of people moving outside of the house, you know? So that's mm-hmm. one of the things to look for. The hardest thing in non-human and mammals, because all mammals have the neurochemistry and neurostructures to be traumatized and to experience trauma, the hardest category is the category that includes flashbacks and nightmares and having, quote, frightening thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We think dogs have nightmares. All the research suggests that they do. We know that they dream. They probably have nightmares. By the way, they're not running when their paws are flapping. It has nothing to do with it.
What do you know about that?
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
what is the story
you
there?
You can't just throw that out. You have to.
Well, I wish I knew more. All I can do is tell you the chapter titles. Is that part of being asleep for a mammal is that part of the movement centers or the motor centers of your brain are basically turned off. So you're sort of semi-paralyzed, right? Mm-hmm. And when that falls mm-hmm. apart, you can walk in your sleep, you know, drive, you can do all kinds of things. But so there's sort of a variety in that system, and especially during REM sleep, you know, where you're doing that deep sleeping and your brainwaves change and you're often dreaming, that softens a little bit, so you start moving and twitching, and it means you're in a deep sleep and you're probably dreaming and you're in REM sleep, but it doesn't correlate with what you're dreaming. So just because a dog's paws are twitching doesn't mean it's chasing a rabbit. We always say that, you know, he must be mm-hmm. running. But we never say that with people.
No.
This is sort of funny. So we can't ask them, do you have nightmares? Do you have frightening thoughts? So I'm not comfortable talking about PTSD in dogs. Some people are, some people aren't. I don't think it matters all that much, frankly. There's no question that dogs can be psychologically traumatized, and that's what matters. So mm-hmm. looking for your dog to sort of gradually start expanding its fears, and its fears becoming pervasive, becoming either sort of shut down or the opposite, where it's hyper-responsive and hyper-reactive. Those are good signs of something that happened that might have traumatized your dog.
Mm-hmm. So then what? So there we are. We go, oh, I've got a dog and got all these issues. Since we can't take them to the therapist and chat about it, what do you suggest families do as their next step?
Yeah, the first thing to do, and this is true of any individual who's been through who basically is sort of living in some kind of a trauma state, is to create a sense of safety. That's what you lose. You know, when you're traumatized, you lose your sense of safety. And there's a great line, I think it is in After Silence, about it's hard, you know, sort of basic safety is something that we just all assume we have.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, the privileged of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose it, it's impossible. It's almost impossible to get back, and it's almost impossible to describe what it feels like. But the one thing I can say that it feels like is that you just always feel unsafe. So one of the most important things to do for dogs is to create a sense of safety, that you're going to manage them, you're going to help them, you're not going to force them into situations. You're not going to say they've been traumatized in a dog fight, which is not uncommon. You're not going to keep taking them to dog class. You're not going to force them to even walk around the neighborhood. Another example are dogs who've been rescued. Say dogs who have been raised or lived in very difficult situations. You know, maybe they've been brought from the streets of a South American country, or maybe they've been in some awful, disastrous, you know, puppy mill, hoarder, nightmare situation. We need to keep in mind that being taken from that and putting in a new environment is traumatic itself. It's mm-hmm. profoundly mm-hmm. traumatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of clients who rescued dogs who had horrific backgrounds, and what the dog is suffering from at the moment is trying to cope with a completely new life and new environment, and that's the trauma it's actually living through, not to mention what happened to it before. So the most important thing to do is to create a sense of safety and not force the dog to do anything. You know, if the dog is afraid to walk around in the neighborhood, you don't have to walk a dog in the neighborhood. You don't have to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can
right.
teach him to potty in the backyard. I mean, if you live in an apartment in the city, you do. But if you don't, you can teach him to potty in the backyard. You can teach lots of tricks, lots of mental exercises, really, really good, because one of the things that gives an animal a sense of safety is autonomy and ability to make choices. And so, and I think tricks are a wonderful way to do that. You know, a lot of the, quote, obedience training, I think, gets really loaded. Sit down, stay, and people tend to get really invested in, like, you know, they're supposed to do it, right, don't they? Don't you find that tricks are a great way to get people to have a more fun relationship?
It's so funny, because your trick training improves all of your skills across the board, because I think you just relax and go, I really don't care if he can crawl across the floor. And then, wow, magically, he crawls across the floor. And then he sits better and does loose leash walking better and everything else, too, because you relaxed.
Well, one of the things that I do, too, in class is I actually will play games, you know, have people, you know, okay, I will say, you know, we're going to have our dog do this or that, and then everybody tries to do it. And when we play games like that, then people stop worrying about training and start working about focusing on my dog and what do I need to do to get him to lay on his side. And so it's fun, because then you're actually working with the dog. And I think you and the dog are having a lot more fun. And I think that's one of the ways in which you help a dog feel safe, is by not giving, you know, and giving it something to do besides focus on its fear. But my person is now totally engaged with me. And having somebody totally engaged with me promotes safety, I think.
I think that's just brilliant. You know, making, you know, let's focus on the goal of the game. You know, the way I learned to ride horses best was when, you know, I grew up in Arizona and did a lot of riding when I was young. And we would, it was with a bunch of cowboys, basically. And they had all these games they'd play on horseback that they'd done ever since they were kids. And so we weren't focusing on keeping our heels down, and, you know, and we were focusing on staying on the horse while we ran to the flag and grabbed the flag and ran back, right? And I think that's brilliant. You know, giving dogs in a way that they can cope with, because, you know, every dog is going to be different. But knowing the dog well enough, knowing what it likes, knowing what it's good at, knowing what's fun, you know, so it could be in a class, but maybe it's not in a class. Maybe it's just in your living room. You know, teaching tricks, playing games, having a good time, and teaching and letting the dog learn that, first of all, there are safe places in the house. You know, I mean, crates can be great. A safe bedroom can be placed. Pulling the curtains can be great. Managing interactions with other people can be great. So basically the dog learns there's a safe place and that you are a safe person. They can count on you not to put them in a situation which they can't cope with. And I think you probably have shared that we see people do this all the time, right? Sort of force dogs in situations they can't quite cope with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think, and any trainer has probably seen that. In fact, I have a class right now with a golden who's a little bit trepidatious about being in class. And so I'm telling the owner, I said, look, the fact that we're here is great. We're going to give the dog as much distance as necessary. And we're just going to pair with a lot of food, because the whole objective here is for this dog to learn to be comfortable around other dogs. So let's let this dog have its say about how close we get, what person we get next to, how much, you know, food. And if we stop taking treats, well, then that's our real cue that we need to back up. So I think that people get focused on the objective of trying to get the dog to do something, because I think you'll feel better if you do, instead of focusing on what the dog is telling them I can and cannot do. And so, for example, can you give perhaps a couple examples, is if you're working with your dog who has been traumatized, what you can do to recognize that perhaps you're going a little bit too far. I think not taking treats is a pretty classic one, but there might be others that they should be aware of, so they don't get to the point where they're actually adding to the trauma rather than soothing it.
You keep leading into the next thing I want to say. How is this happening? Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I didn't know I was psychic.
The next chapter title I wanted to talk about was observe, was learn to be a really good observer. You know, there are those of us who are immersed in the dog world, you get really good at reading signs of stress or fear or discomfort, or dogs just telling you, I don't want to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
or I do want to do this. I think if you got, I'd love to actually see research on this. Here's my guess. If you ask trainers and behaviorists what one thing you wish dog owners would, you know, what skill or knowledge that you wish they would have, my guess is that the overwhelming answer would be that the general public learns to observe dogs better. And
yes.
It's just not
yes.
rocket science, right? Do you guys agree?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
And it's not hard, right?
Yeah.
It's not right. that hard. It's really not rocket science. You know, just looking for signs of, you know, besides not taking treats, of turning your head away, standing still and going stiff, tongue flicking. Or lip licking, you know, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. but the tongue coming out. It doesn't mm-hmm. always mean a dog is fearful, but sometimes it can. Changes in commissure going backwards in a fear grimace, avoiding, sort of frantic sniffing. You know, so some of it is relatively subtle. You know, tail position obviously can be really important. And we, you know, each need to know your dog. It's like a poker game. You need to know your dog's tails,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, just noticing that, you know, he just turned his head away from that. Why did he do that? You know, that's really interesting. Because normally he's usually looking right at it, really interested. Why does he not want to look in that direction? What's going on there that he's trying to avoid? Because remember, avoidance is one of the symptoms.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so learning to be an observer, and there's so many ways to do that. I mean, you know, I've got seminars, you know, Lost in Translation. That seminar is all about reading dogs. There are lots of great books out there, and videos. So it's a really easy thing to do. But the other thing, because I know we're going to run out of time, that I want to be sure to add in terms of people who have a dog who's behaving as if it's been traumatized, is the hardest one. It's patience. It's just severe trauma is limbic. It's so primal, you know. It's based in your limbic system. It's based in that really primitive emotional system. You can't just train it away. It can take mm-hmm. months and it can take mm-hmm. years to recover from trauma. And my experience as a behaviorist is that's one of the hardest things for people. You know, he should mm-hmm. be better by now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that happens to people all the time. You should be over this by now. We're a very impatient species. I mean, I think people have experienced this with grief. You know, somebody you love dearly or a dog you love dearly has died. And the world is very sympathetic for a week or two. And then it sort of moves on. And if it's still bothering you 3 months later, it's like, well, what's wrong with you? It's still bothering mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Well, it's only been 3 months, and you lost your mother, your son, or, you know, the love of your life dog, you know. So I think that's the hard – I don't know. I'm sort of impatient, so maybe I'm just projecting.
No, I think you are. I think you – because I think people do that. They're like, but I gave you a treat, so what's the deal here? And I think you're right. And I think it goes back to that whole sort of personal experience that, you know, a minor trauma might not take you that long to get over. Maybe it'll be a week or two. Maybe it'll be 3 months. But if you're primed for whatever reason and there's a trauma in your life, you know what? Some traumas people just don't get over. You may be able to learn to cope with it. But I think there's some traumas in life that you never really get over. And I think perhaps even recognizing that is part of the portion of healing, is that this is such a deep trauma that happened at such a critical time in my life that I may be able to soften it, but, you know, I might not be able to get over it completely, and maybe that's okay.
Oh, that's such an important comment. You know, the Education of Will is that title of my memoir has two meanings. One is about willpower is not enough to heal you if you've been broken, mm-hmm. but it's also about Willie, was a dog who came as if he'd been a soldier in Afghanistan or something, and, you know, been through the worst and the worst of warfare. And he came to me as a 7-week-old puppy who had acted as though he'd been profoundly traumatized. Mm-hmm. He is so good now. Oh, he's so happy. But I manage him, and I'm aware that there's always a potential for a setback. I manage me. There's certain things I do not do. There's certain things I do, you know. I will never mm-hmm. be the person I was before I was raped. I mean, there's just no way around that. Mm-hmm. But you can, you know, so it's true that I think these traumas can have permanent effects. What's encouraging about them is that once you understand them and understand that resilience can be learned and that even severe trauma, it's amazing how resilient people and dogs are. It's just absolutely astounding.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So even severe things can be overcome such that you can have a really wonderful, happy life. And yes, you have to manage it. But, you know, we all have to manage stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
To some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because just over the weekend, I was telling Colleen, my dog had a trauma. She got her paw caught in a beaver trap. And
I was just going to bring that up because my question for Julie's story, she'll tell you all the details because it's horrific. But my question is, if something traumatic happens and you're seeing it in the moment, then what does an owner do? So now, Julie, dive back into the horrible beaver story.
Oh, we have a cottage in eastern Ohio, and it's on a private road. And I was walking the dogs on the private road. We got into the cottage. I hadn't even finished unpacking, but they were anxious. And Susie has this culvert that she runs through, and she's run through 100 times. And she ran through it, and on the one end of this time, there was a beaver trap that clamped on her paw. And so she was sitting, and thank goodness it was in freezing cold water, because I think that helped to reduce some of the pain. But when I saw what happened, I raced down the bank, was able to untie the trap from its chain. But I didn't dare take the trap off because I didn't know how to do it. And I was terrified I would cause more problems. So I got her out of the culvert and up to the road, and about a quarter of a mile down the road. And I went, I can't carry her anymore. So I had my other dog with me as well. So I tethered her to a tree with a short enough tether. She couldn't get to her foot. And the other dog and I raced for home, and I got my car and I got her. And the local vet in this area refused to see her. I said, but she has a beaver trap on her paw. And he said, oh, we're booked. We can't see her. And I'm like, she has. I just was stunned. So now I'm getting traumatized. I found another vet that was 40 minutes away. So my poor dog's in the back of the car. I go flying to this other vet. They get it off, but the vet's not there. It's the techs that did it. So I call my own personal vet. He says, I'll call you in any prescription you want, but I want her seen. So at that point, we go flying to the emergency vet clinic in the next county, which doesn't open until, because it's an after-hours emergency, it doesn't open until 6. I get there at 5:30. Well, meantime, she has calmed down. She's licking her paw. She's feeling very comfortable. And they did an x-ray. We were at the emergency vet for 2 hours, and which is another traumatic experience because I had taken my last dog, my most beloved dog, there, and they put me in the same room that I had been in with Bingley. So anyway, mm-hmm. so Susie and I are in this room, and they did an x-ray, and we were very lucky. There was no orthopedic involvement. There were no broken bones or crushed bones or dislocation, just a puncture wound. So she's been treated with an antibiotic and a pain meds. And she's very comfortable. And the next day, she was very ouchy. But the day after that, she ran up and down the hill with my dog. She's gone to our local park.
Oh, good.
But my question is, I have not taken her down the road to that culvert again. Mm-hmm. And so I had this traumatic moment that happened right away. And I got it taken care of as quickly as I could, but the poor dog had that trap on her foot for an hour before I could get a vet to get it mm-hmm. off. Mm-hmm. So and this is a dog, by the way, who's sensitive about having her paws touched. So yay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, first of all, I am so sorry. I mean, that's such a, you know, own dog owner nightmare trauma for both of you.
Yeah.
I just talked to a woman here locally whose dog was caught in a snare trap and now won't get in, who she got out. But now the dog won't even get in the car. You know, so, yeah. So a couple of things. One is, you know, there's a lot of counterconditioning and behavior mod you can do. I mean, and you can also do a lot of management. I mean, obviously, you're not going to let your dog go in the culvert again.
No.
Because regrettably, I don't know where you are, but in my neck of the world in Wisconsin, they've opened up all this land for trapping and hunting that didn't used to be open. So, I mean, it's a big danger to dog walkers. But So, first of all, I would use all your observational skills. You know, she may be fine. Right. This may have been way harder on you than her. Be very careful of assuming that because she's worried about her paws in general, that this is going to make her worse. Shockingly, maybe it won't, you know. Just be really, really, try and be as sort of neutrally observing as you can. You know, it's really, don't fall into a story. It's always good to know a background, right? So you can sort of respond and anticipate, but try and just be a really neutral observer. I would probably start playing paw games with her. You probably have, you know, reach towards paw, treat, reach towards paw, treat. I would probably just start doing that anyway. You probably do it anyway because she's sort of paw sensitive. But I would up the ante on that and make whatever you're giving her even better. If you can do play, I think it's better than food for most dogs. You know, dogs can always take food. They can snatch food when they're still sort of nervous. If they're too nervous, then they lose their appetite. But they can still snatch food and be really tense. It's really hard to be tense when you're playing. So if she likes to play, I would do a lot of that.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you. I hadn't thought of that one, but I love that one.
Good. So you know, what I would do would be based on her behavior. One thing for all of us to know is that there, and, you know, I'm not a veterinarian, I'm not a medical professional, so I'm always hesitant to suggest a specific medication. But there has been some research, some of it's a bit controversial, but there's been some research that there's certain medications, beta blockers, et cetera, can be very useful right after a very scary event to prevent future trauma. So that's something, you know, vet behaviors are great to talk to about that. Definitely talk to your vet. A lot of vets know about it. A lot of vets don't. But there are vets who have been using medications after a scary event to prevent PTSD or the, you know, psychological trauma in dogs. So that's something for people to know about. But I think the other thing is most importantly observe for several weeks, because again, remember what I talked about sometimes sort of like an allergy, it seems fine at first and then it sort of builds. It actually takes time for your brain structures to change. It actually takes time for the amygdala and hippocampus to change. So yeah, be very observant for you know, quite a while.
Okay. Well, one of the things, that I don't know if this is helpful or not, the dog's already on Prozac. Because she has a little bit of anxiety, she has some anxiety, and so I don't know if that will help to minimize things for her, or whether I should be looking to adjust that Prozac dose.
I would watch her really, really carefully. You know, you might want to run it by your vet. You know, there's always the drug interaction issue too. But if you're not seeing signs of her generalizing, you know, or changing her behavior, being, you know, startling, being aggressive over her paw being touched. If you're not seeing any signs of that, then you're probably going to be okay. In terms of that area, if that's an area where you usually walk, obviously you're going to not let her in the culvert anymore, because that is where traps are often put. Right, you know, but so I would, you know, go partway towards that area, play some games, do a little play, go backwards, and see how she behaves right around that area.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because we did do that a little bit on Sunday. I walked down the road in that direction, but we only went a short ways, and then she and her brother dog, who's a burner, were playing in a stream, and then we headed on back. So
perfect.
I've Well, thank you, but it wasn't really. It's nice to know I did what I was supposed to do, but did it accidentally.
You did a great job. But the other thing I do want to say is that this was really traumatic for you. So flowers, chocolate, massage.
Yeah.
I'm half kidding, but I'm actually not, is because that's really traumatic. And so one of the things I've learned is it's totally okay to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't been, traumatized in terms of the actual medical definition, if you've had a big fright, it takes a tremendous amount of your energy to get your body back, sort of back into that, base.
Yeah. Comfort. Well, especially since this was something, it was completely out of the blue. She's run through this culvert 100 times
yeah.
and it's on private property. This is not some place that somebody should have been putting a trap. So, and I don't know how long it's. It was really. So, and of course, my husband was out of town. He said, it's my psychic abilities, Julie. I know things are going to happen, so I leave town.
Well, hopefully everything will end up after that, horrible afternoon.
Yeah. Right.
Good place, yeah.
It's so far it seems to be, but I am well aware of the fact that this could be cumulative for her, and I need to pay close attention to her and, feel like, keep her safe, that we only go a certain ways down that road.
She's lucky to have you. Yeah.
Oh. Well, thank you.
Lucky girl.
She's a sweetie. So, okay, Colleen, is there anything else that we wanted to talk to Patricia about in this particular episode? I think we need to mention her book again, The Education of Will, coming out in paperback end of February. It is a wonderful, wonderful book. I love all of your books, Tricia. I think that you are a great writer and a great trainer and
a great storyteller.
Yes,
which is how information gets conveyed.
Yes,
I really appreciate that. Thank you. One of my goals for this book was to up my writing. I love good writing. I mean, it's just like a treasure to me. I just love it. I savor it. And so one of my dreams is to be a really, really, really good writer. And so I worked really hard on this book. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you have achieved your dream because I think you're a great writer.
You're very kind.
So well, people can find out more about you at your website, right? PatriciaMcConnell.com?
Yeah. Yep, just go to patriciamcconnell.com. You can actually pre-order the memoir now from our website, or you can, pre-order it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, all of those places. And, one of the things that one of my other goals for this book was to spread the word about the fact that animals can be traumatized too.
Mm-hmm.
So, anybody listening, anything they can do to expand that knowledge, where it's talking about the book or finding some ways to let people know that most dog quote misbehavior is not based on dominance, it's really based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
mm-hmm.
more we can get people understanding that a lot of dogs do things they shouldn't do, or we think they shouldn't do, because they're frightened, not because they want to be president of our household.
Yes.
Because I'm pretty
really
sure nobody wants
point.
To be president of my household. So, yes, I think that's a great point.
Well, thanks so much for talking to us today. I'm sure everyone learned a lot.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.